Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com.
Thank you very much for coming to The Value of Free, what the Google Summit really means to mid-sized publishers, and how to establish rights agreements with authors when you're selling books in chunks. My name is Adam Marlin with Metacomic Systems. On my left is Brian O'Leary, and in the middle is Laura Dawson. On the right is Dave Marlin. First, they're going to each introduce themselves for a minute. We're going to have questions just to get a sense as to what your interest level is and what you'd like to hear about as we go, so as we can tailor our presentations to that. We'll then speak about this Google Summit in one section, establishing rights and chunks in another section, and then the very end to questions about anything. And just lastly, inside the packet is a feedback form. You just ask that you please fill that out. And also, there's a lot of information to cover, so if you don't get to your question, please just write a question on here, and we'll get back to you, if not with the exact answer, with how to find that answer. So with that said, please, Brian, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Brian O'Leary. I'm a consultant for publishers and media, working in both magazines, books, and as well as with associations. And there's a little bit of information beyond that on my bio.
And we have bios of each of them.
With a good picture of me.
You're smiling. My name is Laura Dawson. I'm also a consultant to book publishers primarily, but also to library service providers as well. And likewise, I've got more info in my official bio, my website is ljndawson.com.
And she's also the author, of course, of The Big Picture.
Yes.
The blog. Many projects.
My name is David Marlin. I'm the president of Metacomic Systems. We help companies manage their royalty and rights administration and distribution to their authors. And I'm going to focus on that aspect of this for this discussion.
Thank you very much. So just open up briefly, are there any particular questions that people have into this? We will get to a lot of information, but...
Any specific concerns that you're bringing?
I heard that the Department of Justice was thinking of challenging the settlement. Is there any later information about that?
I don't think we know anything beyond that, but that has been reported.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so inside the packet, you'll find a more extensive presentation that's been put together, but Brian will start us off.
And please feel free to jump in with questions.
Yeah, feel free to jump in with questions. It's meant to be interactive.
Except for Don.
I think people are probably pretty familiar with the Google book search history. It started in 2004, where Google started to scan books, initially creating an agreement with several university libraries, larger university libraries. Authors Guild and then later AAP sued Google in 2005 to stop, feeling that it's an infringement. And they reached, after a lot of back and forth, an agreement last October. The agreement was supposed to be ratified by the time this conference took place. It was initially going to be the beginning of May. That's been extended at least 4 months to the beginning of September. There's been, even beyond the DOJ potential inquiry into it, a lot of different parties have either raised objections or concerns or issues with the settlement. And that's one of the reasons that the judge extended the comment period before rendering a final decision. Also, the settlement itself is interesting because it creates a book rights registry, which is effectively an independent entity. Even though it's funded with money that Google earns on search revenue, it's going to be a separate entity that will hold metadata as well as rights data for published works. Rights data in the cases where they're actually, where the rights data is actually known. And there are about, by most estimates, about 6 million titles that would be in either in print, the 5 million that would be in print and under copyright, I'm sorry, in print under copyright, which would be this, about 5 million of the six, or public domain, which is about a million that would be included in that settlement. Ad revenue that's earned against that searchable content when it exists would then be distributed with a little bit more than a third going to the book rights registry and then to the content owners. And there's some interesting models that are planned for institutional and consumer purchase of. One of the things that's interesting about it is that the current model is I think pretty well understood. You can retrieve content snippets. If you put a book or a book is searchable under Google, you return some portion of it. You can put limits on how broadly or how narrowly that comes back. But what's proposed under the Book Rights Registry is essentially a license to institutions, to libraries and the like. Libraries will get one seat for free and then can buy more if they choose. The second piece is it's going to give consumers an opportunity for direct download of digital content for purchase. The thing that's also interesting, it's not specifically planned, but it's on the table, is that there may be some other models that grow out of the Book Rights Registry, specifically print on demand from digital files, which doesn't exist right now. Custom publishing, aggregated content, as well as potentially subscription. So there's a lot of different things that might occur. Those aren't given, and BRR would have to both develop them and or approve them and then develop the capability to offer them. But clearly it's a big shift. If you think about the notion of taking 6 million books, I mean, if 2 million is essentially the universe of books in print, it's right now, and you add 6 million to that, and then you give somebody a print-on-demand capability, it's a big shift in the market. And I'm a fan of print-on-demand, and I think it could legitimize that as a technology, but it's also clearly going to affect existing book publishers. And part of the question that we were asked that Dave and Adam asked us to answer was, what's the implication for mid-sized publishers? And I think one of the things is that with a lot of content coming back to the market, in some way, shape, or form, it's not necessarily going to be that there's going to be a lot of sales of any one of those 6 million titles. But if you think about the impact on the midsize, it's obviously going to strain, the book market is not going to grow by 5 times. And so that you're going to see significant pressure, particularly for a mid-sized publisher, on mid-list books that are not necessarily going to be as visible or as easily marketed as they have been in the past. The other thing that's I think is if in effect we think mid-sized publishers should think about for these books is you have to obviously enhance the value of existing content, annotation and other aspects that would make it useful and searchable. But the other piece that Laura's going to talk about is different views of the same content. Chunking might become more important, and rights obviously becomes really important. There's a chart that's a little bit hard to see on the small scale, but it kind of gets at.
Okay,
this piece of it here. In effect,
that's on page two.
Thanks. This particular chart is just kind of an indication of what happens in our view in the marketplace as the long tail kind of lifts up a little bit. In a relatively static market, the middle of the curve comes down. So bestsellers continue to sell quite well. Long tail comes up slightly, and you get incremental sales on the end book. But it comes largely at the expense of the mid-list titles. And that's potentially a source of great pressure for publishers in that who are putting up books of that size. A couple of things that we thought about in terms of getting ready to prepare. One is that you obviously want to think about more uses. Google's putting potentially different business models on the table, like print-on-demand and subscription. It doesn't mean you have to work. You can work with them and through them, but also you might enable a variety of other models for existing books, and also chunking content. But fundamentally, work that Mueller and I have been doing, it seems forever.
It is. It will be forever.
I just found out she had a blog. on XML and Agile content comes to play here because fundamentally, if you're going to do a lot more with existing content, the current model of create a book, print a book, see what other uses might exist, isn't going to fly. And you're going to have to be faster and more flexible in that regard. Metadata is going to be really important, particularly if you want to play ball with Google and be part of the book rights registry. Your metadata has to be in good shape. Most book publishers have solved that problem, at least in the trade space. Onyx is a good tool for that. But if you haven't been actively marketing your content through the trade space and you haven't really paid as much attention to you know, what your metadata looks like, that could be a roadblock for effective.
Would you define metadata?
Sure. In this case, it's the Onyx level data, title level data for things like book, author, in my view, on whether the settlement passes. And I kind of punted, but I think the settlement as proposed won't pass, but a settlement will occur. But if it failed through, I still think the same advice of a trade publisher, they're pretty wide, it's pretty much accomplished because Barnes & Noble won't take a book that has poor quality metadata. But if you're not working through the trade space, you might not have good metadata in place. The same thing's true of rights. I mean, and rights actually are a form of metadata, but they're its own can of worms. Who owns content, or more specifically, who owns each piece of content that you put into Google, will become a much bigger deal. Book Rights Registry is set as its ambition a goal of actually cataloging, where known, all rights.
To all content.
Yeah, well, and I wish them luck in doing that, and I'm glad it's not my project, but or I wish it were my project, but then I wouldn't have to work anymore. But but the reality is that obviously if you want to gain the revenue that Google might offer through search, you're going to have to know where that revenue should go. And if you own the rights, great. If you own rights and somebody else and owe money to somebody else in that regard, keeping close track of that is important. They'll need to know, and you'll need to know. And if one thing that Adam and David have asked me to think about was what happens if the settlement falls through. It is still an open question. DOJ might challenge it. Adam asked me in the 9 o'clock session, which I thought was cruel, what the over and under was, in my view, on whether the settlement passes. And I kind of punted, but I think the settlement as proposed won't pass, but a settlement will occur. But if it failed through, I still think the same advice that we're given today makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, there's at least 1 million public domain titles that will come online. That's a 50% increase in the universe of books in print. And I think that's going to make vertical niches, annotation, and preparing your metadata and rights even more important. It always makes sense to be on top of your rights, particularly if you want to sell titles well. It's sort of our elephant in the room in a lot of ways. I mean, virtually every publisher has storage boxes, file cabinets. Maybe if they're lucky, they've scanned all the contracts. But it's not well organized, and it's certainly not married to the content. Ultimately, you want to get to that point, and I think the settlement, whether it goes through or not, is going to put pressure on publishers to have a much better handle on what their content is and what they're going to do with it. So that's kind of the high level.
David, did you want to speak to the rights component of this at all now, or you want to?
Well, I mean, as Brian alluded to, the rights component, and I saw a lot of heads nodding, the rights component of this really is it's a huge can of worms, and it'll be great if it can be tackled, but there's so many challenges to it. You know, the Book Rights Registry offers really, I think, the potential in many ways to revolutionize the industry. Whether it will reach that potential is up in the air, but it provides a mechanism for creative entrepreneurs or existing businesses to take your content and use it in creative new ways and monetize it for you in ways that maybe you hadn't thought of. And the rights aspect of that is tremendously challenging for a lot of reasons. One reason certainly is, you know, there's no standard way, a widely accepted standard way of identifying rights. So, you know, your system, you might say French foreign language rights, you know, you tag that as, you know, FFL, but the book rights registry might call it CDE or something. They'll come up with some crazy, and Laura will be able to add it to her blog
as another acronym.
So there needs to be a standard, some kind of a way of standardizing that, and then just the complexity of it. I mean, many publishers, especially in the trade, don't acquire universal rights to their titles. They acquire hardcover, paperback, mm-hmm. But they don't acquire foreign language, foreign country, serial. You know, there's as many rights as you can think of, and so. So how do you manage that? It's gonna. One of the things that I think that we'd encourage publishers to do, we being Metacomet, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is to think this through in future contracts, because this BRR, the Book Right Registry, is gonna be something that you're gonna have to deal with, and it's gonna be kind of a pain in the neck for content that you don't that you already have. But if you can address it in your future contracts, you might save yourself a lot of effort. You know, you might be able to put something in where you say, well, we will retain all rights for BRR and give you 50% of the revenue or something, or 10% of the revenue, whatever you negotiate. So there's a lot of challenges related to the rights component of it. And if you can simplify it like that by saying, let's just give us, the publisher, the rights, and we'll market it for you, promote it for you, then you open up a lot of doors in terms of how you can monetize that mm-hmm. that content.
Yeah, if people have questions, it's very helpful to, we really like to address the questions. What questions, concerns do you have?
Are you saying a separate clause, contract clause, that says, and BRR rights, which will be split X and Y?
Yeah, Don, that's a good question. So, you know, I'm obviously not a lawyer, but I've read a lot of contracts, being a royalty person, and some contracts, it's amazing the way contracts can be worded. Some contracts very clearly delineate, you know, most of the commonly accepted rights. Some of them do things like, for hardcover we'll pay you X, for softcover we'll pay you Y, for everything else will pay you 50%. So I think if you need to work this out with legal counsel, but I think if you put a clause like that in there for BRR use, you save yourself a lot of potential future headaches. Now again, this is all in its infancy, so we don't know where this is going. But trying to think it through and see where we'll be in 10 years, that kind of a clause, I think, could save you a lot of grief. Yeah.
I think that's the problem with the agents.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it obviously depends what genre you're in. I mean, the STM folks,
it's work for hire, a lot of it.
Yeah. And also those authors will love it. I mean, you know, they don't usually have agents, and you know, whereas in the trade, it's going to be a much bigger challenge.
What percentage could you possibly sign with it? What percentage could you possibly sign to an unknown magnitude of rights? How can you possibly sell it to an agent at 50%? You don't know what you're talking about. Exactly. Right. I mean, you could put some timing clauses in there for the next two years. I mean, negotiation at three years to industry standard. Right. Yeah, yeah. Because no one knows where this is going. I mean, that's the problem. Right. But at the same time, if you don't, you know,
it's almost, you know, Brian's work with piracies in some ways analogous to this. If you make your work hard to be made available, then it's harder to monetize. It's harder to make money off it. Mm-hmm. So
if it's not discoverable, people can't find it.
Yeah. If the rights aren't easy to overcome for someone who doesn't want to use it, then they're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have a question, please?
Well, this is a little bit off, but you know, one of the things that I've been trying to find out here is what are the other big publishers doing with their e-books as far as Are they splitting 50-50?
Every publisher is doing it differently. Yeah. There are no rules right now. And it's something that agents are playing a big part in negotiating, you know, individually for their authors.
Are you seeing seeing it going in any direction?
Well, there's a little bit of the model is, I think the people, publishers are trying to push is 25% of net, if I recall.
Well, no, I'm just looking at Laura because I know that she's at Soho Press has seen a big uptick in ebook sales, and I'm kind of curious if you don't mind putting on the spot a little bit what you're seeing in that.
We have three different rates right now. We were more generous in order to get rights to books we didn't have rights to when we saw the need for them, and we were splitting net at 50%. We went to 25% when Random House inadvertently circulated the industry, which of course they should not have done because conscious parallelism is forbidden, letting them know that the Random House split was between 25 and 15. And we thought that was good too. And some agents will take it and some agents won't. It's individual negotiation, just like every other clause in every contract, which is why it's so hard, going to be so hard to standardize any of these things. You know, most contracts, if we have translation rights, we have them worldwide. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's except for France and the Francophone countries, plus
right.
Japan.
Right.
You just can't say it's always
exactly.
X or Y. And the newest thing, which is being pushed by publishers and some agents, will just treat it as a additional unit of the printed book, and so you get mm-hmm. the same split of the usual split.
Yeah.
I could go wrong. I think if I mentioned 10, 12 and a half, 15, mm-hmm. and usually you'll be at 15 for the additional units of the electronic book. But that is not standard by any means. Mm-hmm. Some agents don't want that. They want more because you don't have printing costs.
Right.
And Laura, are you talking of list, percent of list, or of net?
No, of receipts.
Of receipts, okay. Because the whole concept of list price royalty terms becomes an issue as well. I mean, there's no such thing. Mm-hmm. If some random entrepreneur decides to start some site and use your content and give you money, what that's not, you know, there's no list price there, or subscription-based services. You know, if someone starts a crime site, for instance, the subscription-based, there's no list.
Yeah. Amazon changes its policy.
Mm-hmm.
They do at any moment the elephant decides that it's something else better.
Yes.
So I think time and list is fraught with peril.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Well, one question was raised last session. It's a good one. What about books that are not so-called subject to the settlement yet, or are already out there being searched? What's the effect of the settlement on those books that Google already has?
Public domain or under copyright? I'm trying to remember. This would be the under copyright.
It was under indeterminate copyright. They didn't know who the rights holders were.
Yeah, I think, and what came out of that was a discussion and question was, if there's a question about who owns the rights, it's best to claim the book, because the revenue earned against the searches for that content will go somewhere. It'll be this, because essentially BRR is not decided, how it doesn't exist yet, so I'm projecting it. But if you think about Copyright Clearance Center as an example, they accrue a lot of revenue against content, and they distribute that against what they perceive to be the uses of those content. It's not on a transactional basis, but an attributed basis. And it's likely that BRR will be the same, so that if you have a lot of books in the settlement that are earning revenue, that they're found on search, but they're not owned, the revenue can't go anywhere. It's going to be redistributed among the people who are party to it. So it's in your best interest to make sure your books are claimed, because that way you'll get the revenue. But it's also the case that you'll get a bigger share of the revenue because the stuff that isn't claimed will come to you as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's the strongest argument available for being aggressive and making sure that even if you're not sure if you own the rights or the author owns the rights, claim it and then work it out, because then at least the money will be coming to you.
Is that how often works, or is that something that...
That's essentially the Orphan Works question.
Yeah.
Because the Orphan Works revenue goes somewhere.
What about the timing of the claimant? We were going to put off starting the claiming process till the settlement went through the court.
Mm-hmm.
But the deadline is still January 5th, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that it would make sense to go ahead with it.
Go ahead.
It.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not necessarily an endorsement of the settlement. It's just simply claiming the work.
Yeah, so. You might as well.
Yeah, we've got our list, and
right. It's
going to take a lot of work.
Yeah.
And you've got to check your title. It's not only between author and publisher. We have a lot of works up there which we sold for reprint.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be contributed to the reprint and not to us. So you never sold them electronic rights.
Right.
So you've got a claim, or you're going to find you're subsidizing and paying for them.
Which probably needs to help.
And then to just really mess with your head, as one of the people in the earlier session brought up, what do you do with anthologies where there's multiple?
Yes. Yes.
Aren't you glad you missed the earlier?
It's always referred to in terms of author versus publisher.
No, it's not.
It's a very relatively clean cut.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's the messy stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Is there another question?
I don't want to leave you discouraged. It's a good opportunity, but as you point out, it requires work.
Well, is Medicom going to have a system that will handle all this and take
potential
away from
us? Absolutely. We'll work something out for you.
This is bread and butter, so thank you for that.
I want to hear about chunks.
Yes.
So, okay.
I think now we will move on to the next part, which is how to establish rights agreements with authors when you're selling books in chunks and more starters off.
Yeah, we had sort of talked about that a little bit with the anthology issue. Components of anthologies are just one aspect of the whole chunking problem. Chunks essentially are components of a book that are saleable. So if you have a travel book about Europe, you can break it up into France and Italy and sell just those components. You can break it up into the various cities and sell just those components. You can break it out even further and do only churches of Rome or only, you know, fountains of Paris or what have you. Any component that's tradable. Excuse me?
I said I'd like that book.
I can get you Carousels of Paris.
Yeah, sure as well.
And you can take it down to the level of charts, of illustrations, of recipes, of, you know, very concrete components of a title. And if you're going to start repurposing that and making new products out of that, which is something that we've been recommending through the Start with XML project, you're going to have your rights information pretty straight on what those, you know, what you have the ability to do with those components. So essentially what we're recommending is that when you're tagging your chunks and determining what is saleable and what's not, to make sure that you're tagging the rights information along with all of that. Does that make sense?
We're competing with David Baldacci.
Yeah. And we've got some suggestions about how to tag, what to tag, what makes a valuable chunk, what doesn't. But if you look on, I think it's page 5, Brian's got a really great chart there that we used in the Start with XML project about the value of chunkable content and what types of books can be easily chunked and what types are much more difficult and probably not worth doing. Something like a novel, you're not going to chunk very heavily at all. But a cookbook or a reference book or a travel book, obviously there are lots of different ways you can reuse that content. And those are the kinds of titles that you're going to have to be careful with on, when it comes to the rights.
There's also, I mean, this kind of gets at the a triage opportunity. You know,
right.
If you've got a lot of books and different types of imprints, if you start to look through this list and you think, all right, well, this one has a high chance of reuse, a lot of different chunks, then putting money and time into fixing both the content flexibility and the rights makes sense. If it's a relatively simple book and doesn't have a great opportunity for an upside to a long-form mm-hmm. novel,
you can let it go.
Then at least put it to the back burner.
Yeah.
You know, so because there's an order in which things need to be sorted through.
So as we're moving forward in the publishing process, right now the way a lot of publishers are working, they've contracted for one manifestation of a particular book, usually the hardcover, and then they contract differently for the paperback and all the other different rights, sub-rights. You know, they've got their contract. Usually it's on paper and it's stored somewhere off-site. And if another opportunity to use that content comes up, then some poor little intern has to go to the off-site storage facility and rifle through a bunch of, boxes filled with mouse droppings to find the one contract. I've done this work.
I'll be all right.
It's okay. So as you're acquiring new content, you want to make sure to keep your interns happy and make your contracts such that you don't find yourself in that position. Chunk sales are increasingly more important as the content is getting more and more fragmented and distributed on a fragmented level. So particularly, and we keep harping on the XML workflow, but it's really useful because you can store the rights with the actual content, and it's all digitized and flows nicely through the Metacomet system.
Yeah, if you think about the work required to track at a title level, rights and royalties, and it's fairly significant.
Yeah.
You move to a chunked content sales.
It's exponentially.
Or distributed through Google sales. The current approach just doesn't work.
It breaks.
And so a different and more granular approach to managing and tracking rights has to be put in place. That system I don't think exists today. But we're really, when you think looking forward, what are you going to do? We have to start coming up with solutions to that problem.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money left on the table if we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What have you seen, David, from large and mid-sized small publishers that deal with it? Are you doing this yet? You're seeing this?
No, I don't think people are thinking about this yet. It's so new. But I think now is the time to really, you know, again, it all is just potential. It's all making the assumption that the book registry is going to happen, which I think it will. It has to happen mm-hmm. because it represents so much potential for the industry to monetize its content. So it's best if you can think how to put those into your royalty contracts with your authors. You know, I mean, the ideal thing, again, I don't know how feasible this is because of the agent issue, but it's to say, well, let us just deal with anything from BRR. And you can keep your film rights and your whatever, but let us deal with or you own it. But if you don't clearly delineate it, then you're leaving money on the table mm-hmm. because it's going to be hard for someone to use it.
One of the pages that's titled Migrating to XML Best Practices, this actually, we circled a handful of items that are the kinds of things that you should think about when trying to manage rights and royalties. One is obviously it's an editorial decision on what to chunk. It has to occur at that level,
mm-hmm.
but you want to start with editors at least because they're the folks who should have a sense of both the intimate knowledge of the content and its applications in specific markets. Laura mentioned before integrating rights information with content. Currently not done. When we did our surveys, it just was virtually never done.
Yeah.
It's very possible using XML, but it's not currently common practice. But if you're going to see more granular sales of content, or if you just want to better track rights information,
mm-hmm.
Having that kind of integration is important. Separate standalone rights systems are a useful tool, but you know, at a granular level, they will have to adapt to begin to read rights information for chunks. Working with authors to tag for meaning, it's nice to be able to do it earlier. You know, editorial development in that regard is important. And then you don't want to, going back to that 2x2 matrix, you can't do everything. So you want to think, how likely is this to be reused in components versus just a single form? And then kind of marry that likely potential downstream use to what you do. And the last piece is that there are solution providers. I mean, obviously Metacomet's one, but across the board in different segments, and the slide that follows that shows you some of the segments. Even if you're not hiring the vendor, they're at least a source of information and knowledge. But particularly if you do hire the vendor or you're going through an RFP, that's an opportunity to gather information and figure out what's the current thinking about the state of the market and where it's going. And because these systems have a lifespan of years, I mean, not one or two, but 10 or 20, you really want to be thinking not just blue sky, but as broadly as possible about potential uses of content before you make a purchasing decision.
Yeah, because the ground is shifting so quickly that 10 to 20 years is a lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Are you sure there are other vendors, Brian?
Laura.
I never got deep enough into the material, and I wondered if you had an answer to this question. Are these chunks going to be sold at a set rate imposed by the BRR individual?
No.
How are they going to be priced? Is that covered at all in this paperwork?
Well, no. Well, I mean, is in our paperwork or in
in the
massive documentation
yeah.
printing out?
No.
Oh, my God.
There are two things that I'd point to. One is the settlement agreement itself is relatively silent on the mechanics of how these downstream uses that are currently only on the drawing board might work. And certainly not when it comes to pricing. It would be likely that it would be set by the publisher. I mean, and they would become essentially like a... where CCC is just a transmittal, the book rights registry would be in effect a go-between and more automated than CCC. Mm-hmm. But it's there's no pricing.
There's no reading on this particular issue because some chunks we license permissions. Some permissions are very valuable. Some permissions we're willing to let you use this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. But wasn't there some $65 for something in there?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah. Well, that's yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. You can
go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the short version of the agreement. This is without any of the attachments. It's 147 pages. But with the attachments, it's 400 plus pages. But there is a section here. So a Google is initially, there's a large, as part of the settlement, they're putting 134 million, you know what, Jim, right? Is it?
Right.
134.1 million or something into this pot. To pay publishers for content that's already been used, and I think that $60 figure is from that. I think that they're going to pay $60 per work, something like
$65 per clip that they've already scanned.
Yeah.
That were
yeah.
Most of the content.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and our interpretation of that is that it's a fee for the illegal scanning of it. It's not a royalty.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. So, it's ours.
That isn't a future establishment of value as far as...
No. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's why it's really a pass-through for prior work as part of the agreement.
And from what I think, I've kind of skimmed through the thing a few times. And from what I remember, any pricing is going to be left to the publisher.
Yeah.
And Google is not
$99
ebook price.
Then it really becomes an antitrust issue even more than it already may be.
But basically what we did tell the book rights registry that
this is what we're pricing it at this, just like you would with the list price of a book. Yeah.
So how granular should the chunks be?
Whatever is saleable independently, it's got to be able to stand on its own. It's got to be able to, you know, support an audience. It's up to each individual, I would say, editor working in conjunction with the marketing folks. That's how those packages are going to be designed.
Well, if you were doing a cookbook,
yeah.
the sellable, the granular breakpoint would be a recipe, you know, and so, or if you're doing a travel book,
well, the
Mountains of Paris. but I think that the you would probably in books like that you would tend to your taxonomy would be even more detailed because you would want to track, for example, ingredients in a specific way or preparation method.
Right. That way you could determine, okay, our chicken recipes are seriously selling. We're going to put more editorial and marketing effort behind chicken.
People may buy one thing, but you tag below that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the
just for tracking.
Yeah. Wouldn't that potentially make for a big drop in revenue from mid-sized publishers? Because now people have to buy a whole book to get that, and they'll eventually be able to just buy this one section.
Well, it, maybe. I think. The answer is I don't know. That is the great unknown, and that's part of the issue we face with digital content in general.
Yeah, it's not just a mid-sized publisher problem.
I think that if people are looking for a travel experience, a cooking experience, the things that an effective cookbook publisher does is sell an aspect of the experience that you can't get simply by downloading a recipe. You know, the notion of selection, of perusing. On the other hand, if you want to know how to raise chicken, it could be a really effective substitute. So somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you download a Taunton recipe, and wow, this is a great recipe. Maybe you'll associate. Maybe you can brand it so that people will want to go back to Taunton for more. You know, who knows? But
the other thing
people
about
should always want to go back to Taunton.
Yeah.
The other thing about chunking, though, is it allows for more licensing opportunities. That you know, with a book as a discrete object, you can't necessarily do. So Taunton, you guys are licensing to Epicurious. Yeah. So you know.
You had thoughts on this, Don. What was your thinking? You were about to interject at the beginning. What was your... I said
you really shouldn't put him on the spot like that. He's not good.
We're a different kind of publisher. We're how-to, and we have lots of illustrations, and we have zillions of contributors in each book, and so this is both a big mess and a big opportunity for us. And we see a lot of ways to chunk as deeply as we can go and then recombine these things for a custom title on a particular topic or a licensing agreement with somebody else. And so it's a huge job for us.
Yeah.
It's a huge opportunity.
I think that the substance of your question is an important point too. This business is changing, and it has changed, and it will continue to. And you can sort of ride that wave and figure out how do you continue to develop, or not. And there's a valid argument to staying, you know, with the current publishing model, and working it to the best of your ability. We're not pitching that angle. It's not because it's a bad angle, but just because, you know, if you want to prepare for what the world looks like with Google, that's why you're here this morning. So they're both, you know, you can stay a print publisher or predominantly print publisher, or you could start to adopt this. But if you adopt this approach, you may start to cannibalize some of your existing business. And that's going to be...
It's part of the cost.
It's a question of do you do it or do you run the risk that somebody else does it? One thing I didn't point out in the last session that I think is useful, there's a link on the last page to the first link on that list to Bill Rosenblatt's paper that on the Google settlement. And Bill and I don't do any work together, but I just found it to be a really useful resource and a good overview. It's deeper than we can get into in this session, and I encourage you to download it and take a look if you have an opportunity.
And if you're really interested, the actual settlement, the first part of it anyways is really quite readable and understandable before it gets into all the legalese and the library section is a little complex, but the publisher section, the first 60, 70 pages of it is good info.
Any other questions?
You're all thinking David Baldacci. They have Nicholas Sparks too.
David, what have you seen in terms of the complexity? What do you see happening with the complexity of royalties versus what's going on now, given this? And are you seeing any indication of increased complexity with e-books? Is it just a precursor to what this could mean?
I think, you know, in terms of royalties, the actual administration of royalties,
rights and sublights.
Yeah, what probably won't change much. But it's the rights aspect of it, and how you calculate those royalties and getting all those agreements down, it's mind-boggling the complexity. And who knows even if it's solvable? You know, it's the kind of thing I think is worth trying to attack. But there's so many aspects of it that need to be attacked. There has to be standardization so that what you agree to will fit in the tags that Laura was talking about, and somebody else will understand what those tags mean. So there has to be standardization. But theoretically, there's an infinite number of ways to use content. So how do you standardize infinity? You know, and then you have the anthology issue, and so it really starts to get mind-numbing.
Yes.
I do think, though, because we could describe problems at great length. One of the things that there is not a solution in place today. There are not standards for how to track rights. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't, for example, take on the notion of tagging and structuring content, with the understanding that over time, some of the things that you did may not be as useful as you'd like them to have been, or that they might change.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, at a minimum, if you were creating, in that recipe example, recipes, you would want to create the content in a way that mm-hmm. was achievable. And you'd come up with basic things like, you know, this is a heading, this is a an ingredient, and put boundaries on it. And then that would give you at least the starting point to be able to then track rights information and link mm-hmm. it to the mm-hmm. The actual content.
And when it does become standardized, it'll probably be an easy conversion process.
Yeah,
but if you haven't tagged it that way to
right.
start with,
yeah. right, then you have to do all the hard work at that point.
Right.
And the other thing is that the solution doesn't have to be done on the same time frame that, you know, claiming your works is. That mm-hmm. what we're talking about here is essentially the downstream implication of a lot of content coming online. And the first impact is that long tail sales potentially depress mid-list books. The second part of it is that lots of other distribution and sales opportunities may start to complicate or muddy the waters and create opportunities that you'd like to be able to take advantage of. But that second piece is probably N years away. But it's going to take N years to kind of get to our current backlist and future frontlist and make it marketable and saleable in those ways. So, one of the things I did a panel at Tools of Change on print on demand, and one of the things that we kicked around was what's the tipping point opportunity for print on demand. And the first thing that came to mind was this settlement, because if all of a sudden millions of books are a button away from, you know, ordered on print on demand, people will get this notion. I mean, the espresso book machine's on display here. I don't want to put one in my basement. But all of a sudden, you know, this notion of any book I want, I can get tomorrow or mm-hmm. a couple of days from now. That's a whole different mindset from the notion that we have right now of, you know, there's only a certain number of books that we can get. We can order them through. We at least have the ordering through Amazon. But the notion of just, I'm going to get that one and it's going to be made and delivered to me, could really open up an entirely different content ordering and content creation market.
Nobody knows what Google's going to do with this stuff.
Run ads against it.
Well, we know that.
Yeah, they like ads.
We know that, but they've got all the scanned content. Uh-huh. Some of it is not well scanned.
Right, no, right, exactly. Yeah, some of it is pretty ugly.
Well, we do know that they're going to offer subscriptions.
Yeah,
like a
commercial subscriptions. And then, but what they do in the future, who knows? But I think personally, I mean, and this is pure, this is a huge shot in the dark because it's so early, but I think the book rights registry in some ways could represent more of an opportunity than than just Google alone. I mean, you know, companies come and go, and Google will get too big for its britches one day, but what other people can do with that content, I think, mm-hmm. with this book rights registry is exciting. But when is that going to happen?
What's your concern about the Google settlement that fosters that question? If stuff there to have scan, just people using it for free, downloading it for free, or is there something?
Well, it's that Google is going to have all this, and I think it's libraries are concerned about mm-hmm. what is Google going to charge them mm-hmm. to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably, along with fair use, the fundamental objection to the nature of the settlement.
Yeah.
And it's, this morning we're kind of focused on implications for certain types of publishers.
Yeah.
But it's a big question mark, because it will effectively give them a monopoly over this content, because no one else is going to be in the scanning business after this.
And we have 5 minutes left. I should open up to any questions from anybody about this. Please feel free.
You don't have to ask us about these topics. We'll just give you our opinion on DEA or anything else.
Or Brian's outfit, which I think is really quite nice.
Yeah, thanks. We didn't even talk about piracy.
Actually, so can you give in a 2 minute
lockdown? Yeah. People want to stay, they can ask me.
Right. Brian's published a fascinating study of piracy and the effect on sales. You might want to document that. So we'll be around here afterwards. You can keep talking to us, ask us questions. We do have a feedback form inside the folder. We ask that you could please fill this out, hand it to Jen in the crimson shirt over there. And if there are any questions you did not answer, please feel free to fill that in, and we'll put it somewhere, and we'll get that. We answer the question, or have to find that question back to you.
Yeah. You also have contact information for Laura and for me. Mm-hmm. Too.
Yep.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.